Naomi was often confused for the other Naomi. There are two Naomis, or maybe more, in the public sphere who were once kind of on the progressive side of politics. I heard about both when I was at uni. But then one Naomi seemed to change. She started appearing in certain podcasts and broadcasts. When COVID came along, she was on the front line calling out the dangers of vaccines, how the vaccinated and unvaccinated were being treated as different types of citizens. The tyranny of the state is upon us, genocide at our doorsteps, she declared. In some circles, she was celebrated. In other circles, she was viewed as perhaps a little unhinged. The first Naomi Klein, stayed the same, but she experienced a blurring, a conflation, as people started to regularly confuse the two Naomis, particularly online, but even in person. It felt like she had a double, like the world had become this topsy-turvy place. I don't know if you've ever had that sensation, seeing people change to the point where they become almost unrecognizable, strangers in familiar bodies. Or if there are people you struggle to have a conversation with because your perspectives are so far apart it seems impossible to talk to each other. I don't know if anyone has ever mistaken you for someone else, or you feel the weight of carrying perhaps a certain racial or religious or whatever identity, where people both see you and don't see you. Naomi Klein names these experiences as the mirror world. There are different online platforms you can use, so like-minded groups cluster and then gaze out looking at other groups and see doubles, people both like them and unrecognizable. This is a quote from her. When looking at the mirror world, it can seem obvious that millions of people have given themselves over to fantasy, to make-believe, to play-acting. On either side of the reflective glass, we are not having disagreements about differing interpretations of reality. We are having disagreements about who is in reality and who is in a simulation. How do you work out what is real? Especially in a time when there is heightened confusion. It begins by acknowledging we are confused. People were definitely confused in Jesus' day. I don't know if you picked that up as we heard John 8, but in John 8, Jesus is once more teaching, describing himself as the light of the world. But he's quickly rebutted by the religious leaders who demand he back up his claims. Show us you are real. Jesus speaks about having to depart soon, and some think he has plans to kill himself. He speaks about the Son coming to set people free from sin, and the crowd says, "We are not slaves to sin, but children of Abraham." Jesus provokes the crowds. He confronts them for their lack of trust. It's all very confusing. It's like Jesus and the crowds are gazing across from each other and seeing both people like them, but also people who have lost grip with reality. John 8:48. The Jews answered him, "Are we not right in saying that you are a Samaritan and have a demon?" Sometimes confusion is deliberately encouraged. A tool used by those in power to create division, to distract so they can get ahead with their own agendas. Jesus is accused, and not for the first time, of being demon-possessed, and maybe not even Jewish. I'm sure there are some who actually really believe that Jesus is demon-possessed, but I'm also sure there are some saying this to discredit him. Jesus is a madman. A bad man, leading people astray, unhinged, in league with the evil one. Don't trust Jesus. Don't listen to him. It's all a trick. It can be disconcerting for us who are maybe more used to seeing Jesus as wise and good to hear this type of talk. It's like there are two Jesus standing before us. Which one is real? Now, to further complicate matters, Jesus similarly accuses the crowds and leaders listening and belonging to the devil. He does so because he believes they are lying and that there are intentions to murder him. It's like there's this reflective glass between them, and we are left in this topsy-turvy state trying to work out what is real and what is not. Who should we trust? In John 9, we are introduced to a man who is blind. blind from birth. He could be our guide through this confusion because he is not Jesus. He's not a disciple of Jesus, and he's not a religious leader. He's not in either camp. He also could be the right person because this is someone who has experienced confusion, trying to live in a society built for people who can see rather than those who can't. It's not just his disability he has to contend with, but living with confusing interpretations about why he is blind. We might not think to ask his perspective, to trust him. The disciples don't think much of him. "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?" they ask. It's highly likely that the man hears their question and has heard such questions before. Is he evil? Did his parents do something horrible and this dark force entered his body, turning him into a stranger? The disciples don't see the man. They see someone who is fundamentally wrong. Imagine the shame the man must be tempted to carry. This can still happen today. Naomi Klein shares a personal story about her son who is neurodivergent. As she has learnt to help her son navigate a society not always built for him, what has taken her by surprise is how people don't want to see her son. Instead, they seem more interested in blame. Vaccines have become the go-to for some when talking about autism. "My child was fine and then he had this vaccine and came someone else. A dark force entered his body, turning him into this stranger." Again, there's a potential confusion and shame for a child to carry and grow into. Jesus says neither the parents nor the man has sinned. There is nobody to blame. Let's cast shame away. He reiterates that he is the light of the world, spits on the ground, scoops up the dirt and the spit in his hands so it becomes mud, and rubs it across the man's eyes. He tells the man to go to the pool at Siloam and wash off the dirt. The man does, and comes home able to see. This is how his community reacts. John 9 verse 8. The neighbors and those who'd seen him before as a beggar began to ask, "Is this not the man who used to sit and beg?" Some were saying, "It is he." Others were saying, "No, but it is someone like him." He kept saying, "I am the man." "This man looks so much like the man who begs on the street. But it can't be him because this man can see and the man who begs on the street is blind. I just seen a lookalike, a double." The man stands before his community saying, "No, I'm still that man. I am real." In the confusion, he is brought before the religious leaders, the Pharisees, for questioning. He shares what happened, what Jesus said, using straightforward words. No embellishments, no theories given, no editorials, just the facts. This is always a good place to start. The religious leaders listen and then interpret the event. Jesus is a sinner for healing on the Sabbath. Others protest, "How could a sinner do such a wonderful thing?" Now you might remember, this man is not the first Jesus has healed on the Sabbath. There was another man Jesus healed who then cooperated with the authorities. There's this doubling as you see this man make a different choice. He's finally asked how he would interpret what has happened to him. Now, this is a wonderful moment to be consulted after spending his whole life on the margins. John 9, verse 17. He said, "He is a prophet." The Jews did not believe that he had been born blind and had received his sight until they called the parents of the man who had received his sight and asked them, "Is this your son who you say was born blind? How then does he now see?" He thinks about it, then says, "I reckon Jesus is a prophet. Someone special, someone sent by God." And just like that, his words are dismissed. Not just his words, his very existence is dismissed. This is not what those in power want to hear. In fact, they deliberately create further doubt and confusion by saying he wasn't even blind to begin with. It's all fake, a conspiracy to deceive us. They send him away and summon his parents instead. Maybe they will give a better, more suitable answer. We can't trust leaders who use fear and confusion as tools for their own benefit, or who deny or cover up the facts. Trouble is, this happens a lot, and it adds to the confusion. It adds to the distrust. The parents are afraid. There are whispered threats that they'll no longer be able to go to the synagogue, cancelled if they acknowledge Jesus as the Christ. They're perhaps also afraid for their son. They don't know how to answer the question, so they sidestep. Yes, he is our son, but we have no idea how he can see. He's old enough to answer for himself. Ask him. I wonder, as we find ourselves in confusing places or not feeling sure who to trust, if we need to ask, do we have any fears or reservations about being able to speak our minds? Both left and right, religious and secular communities can resort to using fear to pressure people to conform. But there actually needs to be room in our communities for disagreement, for dissent, for fears to be expressed to get to what is real. I think it's okay that the Pharisees do interrogate Jesus, test his claims, ask questions. I know they're now seen as the bad guys, but when I read John 8, I see a robust and at times heated discussion happening. We get to hear both Jesus and the Pharisees respond, and that's good. Laying out both sides gives us a chance to work out what is real. But this questioning of the man and his family seems different. This has crossed the line because fear has been given power. The blind man is called a second time to be questioned. They want Jesus to be named a sinner. John 9:25. He answered, I do not know whether he is a sinner. One thing I do know, that though I was blind, now I see. To counter fear, humor is needed. The man once more sticks to the facts, but then he gets a little cheeky. He jokes, why do you keep asking me this? Do you want to become a disciple too? Humor is another tool to expose and name what is real. These leaders are not simply interested in the truth, but they're worried about what it means for their power. I wonder if the man is able to laugh and be bold towards his powerful figures because he has had to learn this from a very early age. He has survived using his wits, his humor, and he doesn't have anything to lose, so he can speak the truth. He declares, Jesus is not demon-possessed. He's not a sinner. How can he be? Look at what he has done to me. Only someone sent by God could do what he is doing. The confusion lifts. It's also telling how these leaders treat the man. Our actions can reveal what is real too. In John 10, Jesus would tell a story where he would describe himself as the good shepherd. This is the image the prophets used to talk about the leaders of Israel. Jesus says, I'm a shepherd who cares for the people I lead. My priority is people's well-being. So much so that I'll lay down my life to keep people safe. In contrast, the religious leaders expose that their care is for themselves, not vulnerable people like this man who they end up hurling insults towards. Who are you to tell us anything? You are nothing, steeped in sin from birth. Now, Jesus has disappeared during this whole investigation, and it's only when the man is cast out of the synagogue that Jesus meets with him. John 9:35. Do you believe in the Son of Man? He answered, and who is he, sir? Tell me so that I may believe in him. Jesus said to him, you've seen him, and the one speaking with you is he. He said, Lord, I believe. Jesus said, I came into this world for judgment, so that those who do not see may see, and those who do see may become blind. If we want to work out what is real, we need time. John's gospel is full of binaries, doubles, light, darkness, blind, seeing, God, Satan. It seems like it's one or the other. But that's only a surface reading. Actually, we see people moving in and out of such categories. Jesus seems comfortable to give people space to work things out for themselves. He doesn't seek to control the blind man. A blind man can be the one who sees most clearly. Those who think they can see can actually have blind spots. Naomi Klein says we must be prepared to look into the dark mirror and see ourselves reflected there as well. Where are our blind spots? She spent hours listening to Steve Bannon and his War Room podcasts. And Naomi says, like it or not, there are many things we can be in denial about as a society. Bannon has a knack for picking up issues the mainstream is blind to or doesn't want to address. He warps and lies, for sure, but people connect because many are feeling topsy-turvy and scrambling to steady themselves, and he kind of acknowledges that. If we don't address our blind spots, conspiracies will take root. Naomi cautions about being too quick to cast out our doubles. Christians have a long history of casting out our doubles, like casting out the Jewish people saying they're forever aligned with the evil one. But actually the truth is it's not easy to know what is real. There is light and darkness, seen and not seen. To move towards what is real, we will need one another. And in John 9, we have a possible guide. It's a topsy-turvy choice, not perhaps the first person we would think to turn to, but this man reminds us to pay attention both to what people say and to what people do. To know the difference between facts and interpretation. To use humour to ask questions. There's much we can take on board for the many confusing situations we might find ourselves in today. Christians are people who should want to pursue what is real because we know Jesus cares about truth. But more than that, John 8-10 addresses those of us who are confused about Jesus. Again, this blind man can be our guide. He watches what Jesus does and what those in power do. This man in the end decides Jesus is the real deal and worships him. And we are invited to do the same.